what I'm going to do is spend the next 20 minutes going through the importance of what human factors is, why it is important, and how we implement it. As trainers, we need to be familiar with human factors. And I think moving forward, we need to be able to assess the non-technical aspects of human factors in radiology when we are doing these work-based assessment. So moving on, human factors exist where there is a job to be done. And Ashley's talk really exemplify the importance of human factors when you're trying to deliver healthcare in a new and changing world. So what it means is a science of understanding human performance within a given system. So translated into the healthcare context, it can be defined as enhancing clinical performance through an understanding of the effects of teamwork, tasks, equipment, workspace, culture, organization on human behavior and abilities, and the application of that knowledge in clinical settings. And this is a definition, a working definition derived from Catchpole in 2011. It is closely linked to ergonomics, which is the application of scientific information concerning humans to the design of objects, systems, and environments for human use. Now, human factors is central to patient safety. In 2007, Martin Bromley, an airline pilot, lost his wife from an anesthetic accident, which had human factors causes. This led him to establish in the UK the first clinical human factors group, which involved both clinical and human factors specialists. And I recommend this website where you will find all the information you need on how to implement human factors in your clinical work and delivery of care. So we've established it's important because it has impact on human on patient safety. And we need human factors to understand the standardized common terminology so that we can use other people's case study and understand them in order to implement these changes in our own settings. So just a reminder that there are six domains in human factors: the teamwork, tasks, equipment, workspace, and the culture in the organization. So these are important non-technical aspects of what we do and what we need to deliver. This slide is taken from the second volume of the How to Guide to Implement Human Factors within the healthcare system. And it demonstrates a wide range of areas where human factors methods and applications may be used. So for instance, where Ashley's involved, in reorganizing healthcare services, which he demonstrated very clearly, how the board led, in the pandemic. And so obviously where we're working locally, support of teamwork, and I will demonstrate a case study from the training perspective in simulation. Many healthcare professions coordinate care across the organization, departments, and team interfaces. But as human beings, we're fallible and we will make errors. And by the design and complexity of healthcare systems, this increases the likelihood that the errors that we make will harm patients, irrespective of how experienced or committed or careful we are. And this is evidence from Reason et al. In 1990. So reducing patient harm is a strategy priority for the NHS. Integrating human factor science into the design of healthcare systems, processes, and tasks can play an important role in reducing patient harm. The first how-to guide of to implementing human factors in healthcare was written by the Clinical Human Factors Group and implemented as part of the Patient Safety First campaign launched over a decade ago. And it provided us an introduction to human factors and explained the benefits of applying human factors in healthcare. So many healthcare organizations have carried out work on implementing human factors, particularly in the nursing sector. So the first guide created a demand for more information from the service. And so the Clinical Human Factors Group commissioned a second volume, and their aims are as follow: to broaden the understanding amongst healthcare teams of how to use human factor methods to improve patient safety. to share practical experience using case studies from different case setting, care settings, and to signpost us to further information and resources in order to support us to implement human factors in our own organization. So I'm going to show one in simulation, as I've said earlier. Whilst we were exploring, during my time as TPD, whilst we were exploring what human factors meant to our registrars, our trainees, we discovered that the senior registrars, before they went on call, faced some new challenges that, you know, that they'd not faced before. And that pertains to behavioral challenges from the referring team. Often there is a difference in the power relationship. They're often consultants, not only from surgeons, but consultants whose behavior to our trainees could be described as intimidating or sometimes downright rude. So what we knew we had to do was to try and upskill them by developing three half-day programs using funds from HEE to play out scenarios, clinical scenarios, so that they could learn these skills. And these scenarios with my small team of two senior registrars and two consultant colleagues, the senior registrar was able to curate clinical scenarios that truly happened within our own department. So they were real to us. And we realized that what we needed was real advanced communication skill training. And so this case study demonstrates that you need to bring in the expert. You can't pretend to be the expert to train them. So we brought in the advanced comm skills trainer. So bring in the expert. We use video technology and we use role play, playing the scenarios. This trainer did suggest to us that we should use actors, but I didn't want to use actors because I felt actors would not have the clinical ability to really make the scenario real. And I felt that my two other consultant colleagues and myself, we had enough natural talent in being aggressive to play out those scenarios with trainees. And we found that these role play, they were very important. I'm not one for role play, but the strategies that were given to us by the comm skill trainer allowed us to understand the reaction from the aggressor. And also by modifying our behavior or the way we responded to the aggressive referral, we were able to moderate, to change their behavior. So we would then repeat the role play, introducing these strategies, and found that it did make a difference to the person who was playing the aggressive referrer. So our feedback from our trainees after the course was that they felt a little empowered by the new skills that they have acquired to help them on their senior on call. So the next case study I'd like to share with you is not one that I've already done, but I'm going to ask you to go away and think about because we are actually running quite late. So I'd like you with your own colleagues to think about how you would develop safe protocols in delivering an MDT service. We all do MDTs and I'd like you to reflect on how you would write a safe protocol in delivering the service. So to help you along, I'm just gonna ask a few questions and that is, you know, when that list hits your desk, how do you do it? How do you, do you have time, protected time to do it? Do you do it in between your other clinical work? Where do you do it? Do you do it in your own office where it's quiet? Or do you do it in a general reporting area? The other question is the information that you're given. Is it accurate or do you have to go away on your Epic system or your IT system to find out what they're actually asking you to do? And finally, with regards to reviewing external images, do you know the college guideline? And if you do, do you adhere to it? Do you always insist on having the report with the imaging coming from externally? And Last, but not least, the outcomes. Do you go back and check that your when you've taken the MDT that they've understood the message that you've given? In other words, do you go back and look at the outcomes and correct them if they're not exactly as you intended it? The reason why I ask this is that MDT, as Adrian had said, is value, added value to the radiology service. And MDT in the oncology aspect is the decisions being taken are very important and have major impact on the service that the, you know, the patient is receiving. So does your present system withstand scrutiny? If there was if there were to be a serious incident, would you be able to look at your process and say that, you know, that it is up to scratch? So I'm going to leave you with that particular case study, and that brings me very nearly to the second half, which is not being afraid to learn, not being afraid to learn from our mistakes, because to err is human, and the performance. Our performance is affected by our personal life experience, external pressures, which is what we're referring to, these human factors, and the lack of robust support structures, again, human factors that we're talking about. Non-technical skills such as leadership, teamwork, workload management, and communication. Communication playing an important role in improving patient safety. And Ashley has demonstrated that in the last year, communication was so important in delivering healthcare through a pandemic. So we have to be able to learn from our mistakes and not be afraid of learning. So an incident should be an opportunity to learn and improve, especially when the patient's perspective is included. But you know what? In reality, that is not the case. I can tell you from my own personal experience and from the observation that I have made that when you have an SI, a serious incident, your first reaction is very emotive, it's defensive, it's emotive, and it's personal. But we need to open up, we need to open our minds and change our mindset if we were to learn from the mistakes. Even if, you know, the environment, your trust and your department may be very open and fair culture to enable you to learn, unless you yourself open up to understanding it and learning it from that patient's perspective, I don't think we can truly learn from our errors. The other aspect I want to just pay a little attention to is the area where collaboration across teams and departments are so important. So aspects which impact negatively on collaboration and team interface, such as bullying and harassment, will have huge implication on patient safety by virtue of it impacting negatively on collaboration. So we're coming to the end. How do we implement it? Through education, through information sharing and sharing of best practice. So here it is. I share with you the first and the second volume of the How to Guide. This will be the only resource you need if you're at the beginning of that journey. And that's the slide that shows all the areas where we can implement human factors methods and applications. And finally, assessment tools. For the past two decades, the assessment tools, there's been much research done in assessment tools amongst anesthetists, surgeons, and scrub practitioners. And I share this with you, and I share with you the website from the Royal College of Surgeons in Edinburgh, where they look at, they demonstrate the assessment of human factors behaviors for surgeons, situation awareness, decision-making, communication, teamwork, and leadership. We are teaching this to medical students in our university now, and we should all be practicing this. But of course, I need to leave you with one thing. You can learn all about situation awareness. You may be mindful about decision-making, communication, and teamwork and leadership. But if you're not an expert in your own field, in other words, you are not the best radiologist you can make yourself to be, then all this is wasted. So human factors There are important in patient safety, but of course you've got to be clinically, very excellent in what you're dealing with, just like Tilak has demonstrated, with this very expert opinion on things. You need to have both. You need to be an excellent radiologist, and on the other hand, you need to be mindful of all those other non-technical skills that we've been through in the last 20 minutes so that you can be safe and practice well. So I hope what I've done in this very short time is to introduce to you what human factors mean very briefly, to share with you the two how-to guides, which is all you need for the beginning of that journey. We've learned why it's important, and we've had a little taste of case studies, and you're going to go away and do that case study of how to write a safe protocol. And I've given you a little bit of further reading and resources. Okay, so I think that is it. Thank you.